This is Pace the Nation. What's up, everybody? Welcome into Pace the Nation, broadcasting back here at Studio 1A in downtown Arlington, Virginia. Feels like home. Back again for our second episode of the new season. It's actually episode 284. I'm Chris Farley, your host of Pace the Nation, alongside me, in front of me, in studio with me, my wife, Julie Cully. Julie, what's up?
Correction, it is season two, episode yeah, two.
That's true. Season two, episode two. People like that, season one, or season two, episode one. This is actually 284. So we're going to call
I'm going with the fresh new season.
You know what? I feel like we have more credibility if we're 284 episodes in. If we're like,
I don't know, maybe we need to take it to a vote.
Yeah, we can take it to a vote. we got to get the social media going again.
I think we should keep talking about social media. We're going to post it on social and then not post it.
We're at Pace the Nation on your favorite social media channels of Twitter, X, whatever that is now. And, on Instagram, of course.
Are we on Threads yet?
Not on Threads.
All right, we need to work on that.
I think Threads will be dead.
We need to get hip with the times.
No, I think we'll probably be dead by the time we actually get on Threads.
I don't know.
Back again for another exciting episode of Pace the Nation. We got a really awesome guest joining us. And let me tease the guest now. And I got a couple topics for you before we get to our guest. But really excited to be joined by a friend of ours. Tommy Nohilly. He is the new head coach of the Atlanta Track Club elite program. So he was at the New Jersey New York Track Club. He was at Empire Elite Track Club, where he was coaching at both of those programs. Also former star athlete, fourth place in the Olympic trials in both 1992 and 1996. Where you were probably before you were even running, he was a Olympic trials finalist and fourth place finisher. Tough spot to be in, not making the Olympic team, but super successful career in running, and now he's the head coach of the Atlanta Track Club. So excited to talk to Tommy today. So we'll get to him in just a minute, but before we do, Julie, audience, everybody knows this is sort of a therapeutic session for me on Pace the Nation. So I bring up our personal life and things going on.
I don't know if I contribute to your healing,
though. I don't know if therapy. You do. Well, it's we'll see. To be determined. Because I'm not even sure I've prepped you with a couple of things that are going on in our home life that I want to bring up.
Maybe this is more of a confessional.
No. It's, you know, what's going on. It is August. It is birthday month for us. And that's what I wanted to bring up here. All our kids, we got three kids, much talked about on this program. Two of their birthdays have happened already. It's August. All three of their birthdays are in August. James, our oldest, is going to turn 7 August 30th. Paul, August 3rd. He just turned 5. And Julian, August 9th, just turned 2.
You're looking at me like
for myself.
Yeah. Like you need me to confirm that those are their birthdays.
So
guess who will never forget when their birthdays are? The one who born them.
Who birthed them, yes. Yeah, that's very true. But August is a busy month for us. I feel like there's a birthday.
And it's the height of your training month, Chris.
I know.
This is when you're kicking off your marathon training. Why are we even talking about their birthdays? This should be about your
marathon
training.
We'll save my marathon training for another show, okay. Which is fine. Thanks for asking. birthday month and three times. So about one tenth, because 330 divided by three. So one tenth of every day in August. We have a birthday, and we are doing the birthday bits, which include starting off the day with cupcakes in bed.
Yeah, that's our tradition.
It's our tradition. Love the tradition, but it is a sugar high for the whole team.
Three days. We kick off the day, and then we feed them a little more sugar throughout the day, a little more sugar throughout the day, a little more sugar at night, and then everybody melts down, and we.
The thing is, it's not like just the kid who gets. The birthday gets the cupcakes in bed. It is every kid getting cupcakes in bed. So they start their day. And I think every time that we bring them the cupcakes, and I love the tradition, it's great. I'm not trying to suggest that we change the tradition. I think every time they're just going to take a bite or two of a cupcake. But every time, Paul licks the entire icing off. He just eats the entire icing, has a bite or two of the less sugary substance of the cake of it. James plows through the whole thing, and then Julian gets it everywhere. We had cake all over our floor of our house, all over their bodies.
They actually walked through the icing and the cake on the floor and tracked it into their rooms as they went to go get changed.
And inevitably, like you said, it's a meltdown. So have you considered anything different, a new tradition?
No, that's the beauty of little kid birthdays. Yeah. There's so much joy and excitement, and then there's so much crying and tears because it's a long day.
It is. It is. But it's great. And there's balloons, and there's presents, and there's yelling because, you know, it's only Julian's presents, and the boys want to open up his presents, and it is just, it's a lot. It is a lot, but I guess that is, we should enjoy it and soak it in. So that was one thing I wanted to bring up, and I'm not suggesting we change tradition, but you know, it is what it is. They still have their camps.
Yeah.
So we have to take them to camps, and there's probably meltdowns at their camps, but, and I'm glad that they do have camps, because then they become somebody else's problem and not our problem. As I transitioned from the birthday to the camps, I noticed something today. You know, these camps are amazing, but they just eat up a lot of our day. I feel like yesterday you were, half your day was work at your new job, but your other half of the day was organizing and setting up camps. It is an amazing time suck.
This is the life of a working mother. I got a little bit of time between December and July to actually take a break and like look and see what this full chaos looks like.
Yeah.
And embrace the full chaos and then add a job on top of the chaos.
Right.
No, that's summer. Yeah. I mean, it used to be, we didn't grow up with camps.
Right.
Camps are a phenomenon of this generation, right? Because we have so many working parents.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you do with the kids in the summer when the whole family has to work or the adults have to work? So they head out to camp. And at least where we are, there's
definitely
40 different camps to choose from.
I feel like less of a dad because I don't know what we would do if they didn't have camps.
Well, you wouldn't know what to do if I didn't put every detail in your calendar. And all you have to do is wake up in the morning and take a look at where I will be managing them.
Yes.
It's a lot of shuffling. Yeah. It's a lot of moving pieces. And they are having a blast, which is super important.
So, yep.
But it is a lot. Summertime is a lot. And then you have the great experience of taking your kids on vacation,
right?
Which is just chaos on the road.
It's 7, 5, and 2. It is chaos.
It's chaos on the road. We came back from New Jersey last week from visiting my parents at the beach, and our 2-year-old cried for 5 hours.
I know. All
five
the way
straight
home.
Hours.
All the way home. Yep. Yeah, that wasn't fun. But
that's summer. Yeah, summer is summer. For us, summer is birthdays, it's camp, it's sugar, it's madness. And then like every parent is just so thrilled that we are 2 weeks away, just 2 weeks away from school.
From school
starting
August 27th
and
here
continuity.
In
and we know what's happening on most days.
Yeah.
But it's been fun.
So
it has been fun.
I think that's my roundabout way of giving you props. I don't know how you handle it all. Thanks for doing all those camps. You know, I did drop off today. That was my big thing that I did. And you know what I did? I forgot James's glasses. So then I got to drive all the way home. Time suck of the day.
Forgot the glasses. I'm pretty sure you forgot the sunscreen as well. So they'll probably all get burned today.
They got a little bit of sunscreen.
Okay.
They, yeah.
Okay.
They do. I worry because when I put the sunscreen on, they have it all over their face and it's not rubbed in appropriately, but
yeah, a big part of my job is managing you as well. So you can talk about the kids, but managing you and giving you lists to head out the door every day. I gave you a list before you headed out to go get coffee and you forgot about the list and came back with just the coffee. So,
all right. So that's our summer. So props, you're doing great. You're doing great.
Thanks.
Yeah. All right. We're going to transition. You know what? Tommy's got 3 kids. He can understand.
Tommy, they have, I think his, between his firstborn and then the twins, I think 17 or 18 months.
18 months apart. Yeah.
So
yeah.
That was a very busy time. Yeah, very so busy time.
So
yeah.
I won't go into it with him, but he would, because I don't want to belabor the point, but he would get me. He would feel me. At least that's
I don't know. I think Tommy's got my back.
I'm sure he does. All right. Excited to be joined next up here on Pace the Nation, episode 284 of Pace the Nation.
Season 2, episode 2.
Episode 284. Next joining us, the new head coach of the Atlanta Track Couple Elite. It's Tommy Nohill. He joins us here on Pace the Nation.
Pace the Nation is brought to you by Pacers Running Stores. Pacers has 5 stores in Northern Virginia and DC. For the best running footwear, apparel, and gear, just stop by or schedule a virtual fitting with the best running experts in the business. Pacers Running exists to help as many people as possible through running. For every run, it's Pacers Running.
All right, welcome back to the program. And now, Julie, we are excited to be joined by the brand new head coach of the Atlanta Track Club. It's Tommy Nohill. Tommy, how are you?
I'm doing really well. Doing well. Good to Thanks see for having it, man. Me on.
Well, thank you for joining us. And it looks like, Julie, that this may be the first time we've had a guest broadcasting from an airstream. Is that an airstream you're in?
I'm in an airstream in my driveway. It's also a brand new airstream. Well, not brand new, but new to the Nohilly family.
New to you guys.
It's the my new headquarters for now. My office, like, because
this is you get kicked out of the house and then you got to go out in the airstream to get some work done. I know. Well, we might need to invest in one.
Yeah. We did downsize and, everybody's working from home. So, we're always trying to find spaces, as you know, like I'll be over here in the kitchen. Okay, where are you gonna be? Upstairs? All right. So now I'm outside, which is great for me. It's no problem. It's a really comfortable, cool space, and I can get Wi-Fi. So
that's awesome.
Good.
Well, Tommy, thank you so much for joining us. You've got a history, a friend of the Farley Culley family here. We want to talk about obviously your new position at the Atlanta Track Club, a transition for you and your family and Kim and all the Nohilly family. So we want to talk about that. But before we do, let's go back. I mean, I know you were an assistant coach at New Jersey, New York Track Club. We want to talk about that as well, but let's go back for our audience who doesn't know Tommy Nohilly, a Queens guy growing up, star runner in high school, Queens, University of Florida. And so talk about you were a real, good high school runner, right?
I mean, I don't think I really ran that well as a high school till my senior year. I think I had some promise, but I wasn't all in, kind of as a high school runner. I just did it because I thought maybe there was a way I could, go to college, and that was what I wanted to do. So, but yeah, I ran well towards the end of my high school career. I mean, it was good, but I think I wound up running 4:12, but that didn't happen till the very end of my first 1600. Didn't happen till the end of my senior year. So I wasn't really I had some learning issues and some challenges that way. Like I wasn't, school was academically was a challenge for me. And so the grades weren't there, So I didn't really get a lot of opportunities. I actually was, I was at home in Queensborough Community College for the first semester of college career.
And before you went to Florida, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. And I actually got a great opportunity. It was kind of a thing where I made a split decision to go out to California to a junior college out there called Taft College, which at the time was a developmental college that, I basically got the call on a Wednesday and I was on a plane the next Tuesday. And I spent 2 years out there. It was in the middle of nowhere. There wasn't even a traffic light in the town, but they had two coaches that were recruiting athletes that couldn't get into 4-year school. So, the idea was get your AA degree and then transfer, which I did. Mm-hmm. And, so I spent 2 years in California, south of Bakersfield, 30 miles in Taft, California. So, and it was a good it was a good opportunity for me because I needed remediation. I needed some help. I wasn't ready.
I feel
to
you,
go,
man. I was right there with you, man. I'm with you. I did not know. Julie, do you know he was? Community college.
No, that's really awesome. Cool.
And so, actually, we had a phenomenal a phenomenal team out there. If I gave you the list of names, I mean, it was a high caliber track program. I mean, I ran 9 flat and I was third on the list for the steeple.
Jeez.
In junior college, we had two sub 49. We had two guys ran 48 in the 800. I mean, these guys were recruiting from around the world. We broke the American record in the sprint medley at the time. I mean, like we used to joke around, you know, it's just a bunch of fast dummies out there. We were going rolling.
Or maybe you were the smart ones.
Yes.
You're getting the 2 years in, you're getting some development, and then you move on to a 4-year school.
It's a joke, right? But we're not dummies, just not academically suited, right? So it was like, you know, we made smart moves, but just like needed a little time to get ready for the academics. So then I did transfer to Florida. And that, you know, that worked out there where I was an NCAA champion eventually and SEC champion.
Star runner in Florida. Why Florida? You seem like a New York guy.
Well,
so Florida just, what was it about Florida?
Well, I had the opportunity to either go to St. John's or Florida, like, because I was actually hurt the last year at Taft. So, you know, I was a little banged up and I had some opportunities out west, but those kind of fell through because I was banged up. But you know, I could have went to St. John's or I could have went to Florida. And like, I knew if I went back to Queens, this was way too many distractions for me.
Yeah.
You know, like a good buddy of mine delivered the beer to the bar across the street from St. John's. You know, that I knew that was not a good idea. Right.
That's where you could go for holiday break. Yeah. That's where you go for break time.
You know, he was delivering the beer to JPODs and like, it just, you know, was not a good idea. And I thought
you knew yourself well enough at that point in time.
Yeah. Like, again, you know, you got to know yourself, I think. And, and Florida offered me a little like just a tuition and books or tuition and meals or one meal a day, whatever it was. But I jumped on the opportunity to be down there and they had a great program. They had just been like sixth in the NCAAs. You know, there was guys like Jeff Pig down there, Mike Blaney. Mike Bilyeu, they had a strong program and the coach Joe Walker was, you know, just a phenomenal guy. And he gave me a shot. He really took a chance on me. And I was even hurt for the whole first semester I was there. And I had this tendonitis in my knee. And that's also where I met Jim and Phil Wharton, which allowed me to learn, you know, the therapeutic side of my skill set as a coach and as an and also as an athlete that I learned how to come back from that. And that's when I started with the strength and the flexibility work with Phil and Jim Wharton. They got me back and then I eventually, you know, that next year we were SEC champions in cross and then I just, you know, it just went from there and I just got better and was consistent, but it was a perfect place for me to be. And, of course, that's where I met my wife, Kim, who's, you know, from Arlington, as you guys know.
Yeah, she went to my high school, Yorktown High School.
And she was there, you know, as a heptathlete at first and also, then was just, you know, hurdler and high jumper. And, you know, it's Florida. So it was a great place for me to be and, worked out well. Like I said, eventually in 89 got to be an NCAA champion and was part of a phenomenal squad. You know, with guys like Dennis Mitchell and Mark Ebert and, you know, we had Olympians on the team. So, you know, you saw the level and that was, that was why, it was great for me to see that and be part of that team. And also Joe Walker was a great coach and John Webb at the time also was there. So those guys were good for me.
So you mentioned all these great names. So you could see a path. You're 89 steeplechase champion, NCAA champion, you know, so obviously you could run at the next level. But probably at the time when you're coming out there in the early 90s, there probably isn't the same opportunities like, Empire Track Club or the Atlanta Track Club. Right. So what did you do?
Well, initially I stayed down there. Kim came down and we lived together. But it was, a couple of years of struggle, from 89, you know, till, Kim was in school, still finishing her degree till in 90 and then 91 we moved in together and I stayed down there, but I struggled. It bounced around with coaches a little bit. I had like a little Nike deal at first. That was my first deal, was a little Nike deal I had for a year, but then I had this opportunity to do a thing that was called the Reebok America program, which was a grassroots part-time work, being like a tech rep in the Southeast. And they had 6 locations around the country for athletes to work part-time, but also train. That was the design of the program. And it was phenomenal. Like, we had a van, and you would basically go around to road races, set up, you know, the new, at the time they came out with the pump. I don't know if you remember the Reebok pump shoe.
We remember.
Yep.
Yeah. And so I would go, we would go around to races and, you know, talk to, you know, give, we had giveaways and go to small races and then, you know, go to some of the running stores and just, you know, talk to them about new shoes. Just make it like a part-time tech rep, basically, but not sales, just tech rep.
Yeah.
And it was phenomenal because, you know, it gave you the ability to train, and there was 6 locations, like I said, and I think, you know, some of the athletes were like Brian Abshire, Kathy Franey, in the Northeast. You know, there were some good athletes that were part of it, and for me, it worked out well because, you know, I think the salary was $12,000 a year, but at that right. time, you know, we were living large in Gainesville, right? Like, it was enough to do what we needed to do, so it was pretty cool.
Right.
Did that for that year, and you know, it was great. We would go to a road race, there'd be like a $500 prize purse. I'd win the race, get the van, set up the shoes, you know, hang out. People would come and talk, and it was really kind of fun, like, to do. And that really helped me that year. And I also started working with Barry Brown, who was a great steepler in the 70s, and he was part of that whole group in Gainesville. You know, like Frank Shorter, Jack Batchelor, all those guys. He trained with those guys in Gainesville, and he was also a New Yorker. So, you know, that was in 91, 92. I had that job, and then I also started working with Barry, who was a real high mileage guy. Like, I mean, I went to 100 miles a week.
Wow.
From, like, not even barely able to ever do 70 miles a week. And Barry, you know, it was hard. It was a tough year, but I was training with Keith Brantley. And because he was also working with Barry, and just like catapulted me to another level because of just the level of work and everything. But the only way I was able to do that at the time was with Phil and Jim Wharton's help, because yep. they helped me with the flexibility and the strength training. And, you know, there was a lot of challenges. But with Barry, you know, that year I went from 838 to 816 in 92. And that's when I just missed the Olympic team.
Yep. So let's talk about that. So we're getting to know Tommy Nohilly, Coach Tommy. He is the new head coach of the Atlanta Track Club. So you run 816 in 92. And I remember these trials in New Orleans. So I don't know if we can group both the Atlanta trials and the New Orleans trials together, the 92 and the 96. But fourth place in New Orleans, probably not heartbreaking. You're feeling good because you're like, okay, I got this. How did you feel after a fourth place finish there in 92?
Like, I always tell people this with that and with 96, like, you know, when you walk away and you know, you laid it out there, you've done everything you did, like, even leading up to it, I did everything I could do. Like, I was running 100 miles a week, I was, you know, working, I was doing everything I had to do, and when you have an improvement like I had on the day, you know, and people don't realize back in that day, in those days, we had to run 2 rounds and a final all in 5 days, so you had Monday, Wednesday, Friday
on a schedule. Wow.
Yeah it was 2 wow. rounds, so we would go, gosh, you know, first round Monday, second round Wednesday, third round Friday in New Orleans.
Yeah, right?
So, you know, it's a little humid. But
yeah. In June, you know, I think
the mileage and some of the strength, because, you know, when you add up, you got to do 9K in 5 days of steeple, right? When you add up the amount of barriers you ran up around, water jumps, like, it's a lot of work, right? So for me, again, like, taking that into perspective, I ran a PB in the first round, a PB in the second round, and then a huge PB in the third round. Wow. Like, you walk away crazy from that, what else are you gonna do? I ran 8:16.92,
yeah,
missed the team by 3/100ths of a second. You can't really hang your head. And quite honestly, like, you know, the next thing I know, like, that night I have a European schedule of all basically IAAF meets, you know? So it's like bittersweet, but like a lot of opportunity. Right. And then, it goes from there. You know, unfortunately that next, so that was, you know, not like you say, it's disappointing. Yeah. It was freaking close, man. And
yeah,
like,
right,
literally we stood there for, like, back then they didn't have the automatic timing and the FAT and the computerized digital, you know, timing, right, to figure out placing and all that. So we were standing there for a few minutes. It felt like, you know, an hour, right? And I remember the girl who had the flowers and the flag, you know, looking.
Is it to you or is it the other guy?
Like looking for my looking for the number, right? And she's walking towards me, and I'm like, I got this, you know. And then she looks at my number and walks away.
Oh,
you know, dagger. So, but you know, that's the initial disappointment. But really, in the end, like you said, like,
yeah.
And I always say this, and I say it to the athletes, like, you know, you lay it out there, you do everything you're gonna do, and you know you've done everything you do. If someone runs better than you on the day, and you know you did everything, you can walk away with a clear conscience.
And it, as disappointing as this, fourth place is the toughest place with these Olympic trials. Obviously, you're 26 years old at the time, and you're thinking, I'm going out to these European meets, and I've got this. And then let's go to 96, where you know, you're primed to make the Olympic team there. How did that feel to be fourth place again?
Yeah. Well, you know, people do say that fourth place is the worst place to be. It's closer, right? But I always say, what about the guy who was 10th? But, you know, there is that, right? But, and you're right. It's a tough spot, especially to do it twice. And it's just, I get it. You know, you're so close. But 96 was tough, right? Because I was on the world championship team in 95, went to Gothenburg, was second. And then, you know, fast forward to 97, I was second again. So, you know, the fourth place in 96 was just tough. And again, that's one of those things where you can't control. You can only control what you can do. Like that track there was hard track, a really hard track. They made it very thin, and it was just like really tough on the legs, and in the steeple, it was tough, and it was tough for everyone. I did run 8:21 that day, I think, and I was fourth. But the thing you can't account for is, I told this story recently. It's like, so Robert Gary, I think I was in third going into the last lap, and Mark Coogan and Mark Davis were ahead, and Robert Gary ran 58 for his last lap.
Wow.
Like, I was known as a good kicker, right? People didn't want me behind him, and Robert was just coming up. He was young, and Coogan, Krogan and he were training partners. He, you know, I always argue he probably would have won it if Mark wasn't, you know,
right
in front of him coming down the last straight. So, you know, he ran a 58 last lap. I ran, I don't know what, I think I closed pretty well, but it just wasn't enough. And that was hard. That was hard, you know, not to go there because you're thinking you got it. And I'm second the year before. And, you know, that stung, and it took a long time to you know, move on, like forget about that and stuff. But, you know, the truth is like, it takes time for some of those things. And when I look back at everything, I have no regrets at all. And I would never, awesome. You know, I wouldn't have did anything different. Honestly, there's nothing I could have did differently there. So, you know, you as an athlete and in life, you got to know, you know, if you do that, you can move on, you know, and I certainly did. And you learn a lot from your failure, not failures. Or you know, when you come up short, you learn a lot from it too. Mm-hmm. So, but like I said, I did get to go the next year to Athens and compete in Greece, you know, and then the following year I was second again in 98. I was part of that. I don't know if you remember the Goodwill Games. I used to have that meet. So, you know, I got a lot of great opportunities and was able to continue through 2000 and retired after that. I think I was sixth in the 2000 trials. So I made finals, and I competed in 4 Olympic trials and made finals 3 times. I think in 88, when I was young, I've made semis, but, you know, it was I learned a tremendous amount. I think that's why I can bring a lot to offer to these young athletes now and who I'm coaching. Cause like I had a lot of experience doing those things as an athlete, and then was able to come back to the sport after, you know, our kids got a bit older and bring some of that knowledge, which, you know, I'm passionate about and I love doing
I love your story because it's not so binary, like it's either a failure or a success making the Olympic team. You've run in a USA jersey, you know, and a lot of people don't realize that because they think of the Olympics as the only thing out there. Mm-hmm. But
right,
it's not a success or failure whether you make the Olympics or not.
Yeah.
Your story says
it's
that.
It's to me, and I tell you, you know, it's such a huge risk for these athletes to put so much on the line, right? And sacrifice. So you going into it, you got to do everything you can do, but you really have to be okay with the fact that this might not happen, right? And you can't let it define your life. But if you, the pursuit of what you're doing is what it's about. And if you do it the right way, you can walk away feeling like, you know, I it's about the Olympic dream and that, right? And, but there's more than that. It's how you do it, how you dedicate yourself to it. Yeah. You want to, you're going all in, but you can't let it define you, and you can't be, you know, that's where a lot of the fear comes from. People is like sacrificing so much with so much at stake and not necessarily being able to have a finite, like, yeah, I'll make it, you know, like you can go get a job. And if you work hard and you put all the work in, you know, you're going to get paid at the end of the week. You know that if you do that and you're consistent and you're good at what you do, you're going to excel and you're going to move up. And in whatever it is you're doing, you're going to get better at it and you're going to get rewarded from that. Not in this sport. You could do everything you can for 3 years and then something could go wrong and you're not necessarily going to get the reward, right? So you really have to be okay with that, you know, and do everything you can to try to avoid that. But it's a huge challenge, you know, and it's like a lot of athletes coming out, like, you know, like if you're doing well, you're making 30K a year. It's like 30K a year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you know, it's a huge risk for young people coming out of, you know, great universities with degrees. And, you know, and I tell them, like, look, if you want to make money, I recommend you go get a job. Because this is like, yeah, you can make, there's some people who make good money. Is it life-changing money? Is it going to be for the rest of their life? Probably not. But, you know, you better be okay with that, you know, because otherwise you are going to be disappointed and you are going to be challenged in a lot of ways. So, you know, the pursuit is not about that. And you got to be good with that, you know.
I love it. All right. We're here with Tommy Nohilly, Coach Tommy. He's the head coach at the Atlanta Track Club now. But before Atlanta Track Club, you were at New Jersey, New York Track Club and Empire Track Club. How did you get into the professional coaching ranks? How did you get in? Because you, correct me if I'm wrong, you were never a college coach, right?
No. Yeah. I've worked with colleges over the years, Columbia and Iona specifically, but mostly on a therapeutic side, you know, like doing the flexibility work and injury prevention, that kind of stuff. With, you know, obviously, not obviously, but the active isolated method that I learned from Phil and Jim Wharton. And, you know, I worked in Phil and Jim Wharton's clinic in New York City for almost 16 years. It was about 16 years. So, you know, I was mainly doing that for many years, but also took that same philosophy and methodology and began working with GAGS in the New Jersey New York Track Club with the athletes there. And that was my role. You know, obviously I had this experience from being an athlete and, you know, being in the sport, because like the Wharton Clinic we worked at, we had a lot of great athletes coming through there, you know, Klee, Knucci, Med. Sure. I mean, people came when they came to New York. They came to the Wharton Clinic to, you know, figure out issues and injuries and injury prevention and stuff. So I was around the sport and it was mostly part time for a while. As my kids got older, I was able to, you know, get into it a little bit more. But so then I did, you know, as my kids got older, I was a high school coach at John Jay Cross River in Westchester, you know, starting in 2009, I believe. I think it was just before my son Ian became a freshman. And at the same time, GAGS moved back east. And, you know, he wanted to get into coaching. And I was like, hey, I'd love to be part of this. And, you know, we kind of grew it together. I mean, obviously GAGS' name and his reputation was easy to recruit athletes and get it going, you know? So, that was in 2009, 2010. And then it just kind of grew from there. More athletes wanted to be part of it. And, you know, my role was like the, you know, therapeutic end and being an assistant coach.
Was mostly therapy stuff that you were doing.
It was mostly therapy. Wow. And then obviously the area of steeplechase, you know, that was my expertise. So
that was all the technical work that he was doing with the steeple athletes.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I would say he was the lead inspiration on the team. too.
Yeah.
Tommy was the one that would get all of us going. Like you needed Tommy's energy at practices. You needed Tommy's energy before races. He was a jack of all trades. So he could coach, he could do the technical stuff. He could pull you off the side of the track and fix your body. And he was the one like getting everybody like, all right, I got to go talk to Tommy. Tommy's going to get me going.
And so for context, for the listeners, the New Jersey New York Track Club that Julie was a part of, that Tommy was a coach of, it, Coach Gags, who we've referenced, that's where Julie was for a few years and ultimately made the Olympic team under the tutelage of Gags and Coach Tommy. So, okay, I understood your role there. Did you really enjoy the coaching part of it? Or did you think that were you surprised as you enjoyed it that as much as you did, and it was more than just the therapy stuff for you?
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoy it. And then like I said, I was doing the high school coaching at the same time, and you know, started to get some success there, and really enjoyed, like, obviously the opportunity that my kids actually wanted to come out and run, and I was the coach. That was pretty cool to see them do it. And it was kind of nice because we, you know, it was a family thing and also the community thing, and really, you know, had some success there. You know, I think in the third year I was there, the women's team won the New York State Federation meet in cross country. Awesome. You know, my daughters were on the team there, and some other great young ladies were on that helped us do that. And then, you know, I had some success there, and that's where I really started like kind of like get my own bearings on, you know, the real solid coaching part of it. Right.
Yeah.
And that, so, you know, was doing that, but also at the same time, you know, Gags, he really gave me a lot of freedom, and we trusted, and it was a great trust there. And I was able to, you know, talk to him, and he was able to trust me with like talking to the athletes. And I never really, you know, I never even thought of like, well, when is he going to retire? Because he was great. I had the flexibility of coming in and out, and I wasn't as available as he was to be there, you know, to be the head coach. Like even when we were in New Jersey, I think I only used to make it to like one practice a week because it was too much to get all the way over there with family and the other coaching. Mm-hmm. So Gags really allowed me the opportunity to stay part of that and the way that it worked. And I think I brought some things to the team that were real helpful, but you know, Gags really allowed me to work in that way. And I continued to learn and be part of that. And, you know, like Julie said, you know, there was some things that I brought that were really helpful also, but like, I do recognize that opportunity was because Gags trusted me and the athletes then trusted me, and we developed a really good mojo with that, you know.
It was a great partnership. It was a great partnership, and we always look forward to you being there. And you know, now having had the experience as a coach for a number of years, you see and know how special it is to have really an assistant coach or someone who brings a different set of skills that can be complementary to the skills of the head coach. And you know, looking back on that time period, I, as an athlete, felt really blessed. And, you know, I can look on it with a lot of perspective now of like the combination between you and Gag was perfect.
Yeah, no, it was amazing. And then John Troutman came on, and then we, you know, we had like really had a good like flow of personalities and what people bring to the table, you know, cause you need that obviously, you know. And then, like, it was just easy.
I was washed up by that era, Tommy, though, so I didn't have the John era.
That's right. Well, so John, I guess, came in, what, like 17, probably? Or, yeah, like, when we, so you were done in 16, right?
Was it 16? Yeah, I had already had a baby by 16. By so 16. I was done I don't know either, so.
It's all blending, like, the timelines are blending into one, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, but.
But that was second phase. To me, that was really second phase of NJNY is when the HOKA partnership came in, and there was a whole different crop and a different coaching dynamic, which was really exciting.
Yeah.
So you were more, so then Empire Elite Track Club came about a couple years after that. Mm-hmm. That was when you and John, you mentioned John Troutman. That's when you guys took this on full time, and this became a full-time gig for you at that point.
Yes and no. I mean, it was a lot of work. It was full-time work, but like, you know, we still both had to have other jobs, you know, like it wasn't, like I always say, you know, you know, there was a lot of workouts, you know, I probably shouldn't say this, being sent out on a New York thruway, you know, so, but, you know, it was it was a full-time gig, and, you know, you have to go full in, because without a sponsor, we had some really great, generous donors that helped us to keep it afloat, from a funding standpoint. Mm-hmm. And great fans of the sport, that really, you know, made it happen. And, that allowed us to continue, because obviously, like, without any funding, it was just, you can't do it. Right. So, but, you know, it was kind of a tough period of time, right? When you think about, we kind of started it up in, 20, you know, and that was just like post COVID, yeah. And, you know, all that. So it was, an interesting time to try to figure things out. Yeah, I mean, when we ended, you know, when after the Hoka and the New Jersey thing kind of closed down, and John and I kept it going and started Empire, you know, we had the opportunity to still have some athletes that wanted to transition from that, and we brought some new athletes in, and then John and I were training partners when I was part of the Reebok Enclave back from like 1993, mm-hmm. and you know, and that's going back a little bit, like, you know, John and I knew each other. I knew John in high school, but we were together at the Reebok Enclave, and we worked a lot together, you know, in training and stuff. So, you know, John had like left the sport for a while and came back in. So, you know, it was kind of a really cool, we've had a great partnership, you know, since then, you know, with Empire, and Empire, you know, is really like it's been like a passion for John and I, and like, we're really proud of what we've been able to build in that, you know? So,
I mean, a lot of good, great athlete performances. I think most of the audience probably knows of Eric Holt and his successes, but I mean, there's been a ton of other successes, but talk real quick about Eric before we get into the Atlanta Track Club.
Oh, I mean, yeah, Eric is a funny story, right? Cause like, I mean, people like, you know, so I don't know if you know the story about how we recruited him. Like, basically, no. I went on Strava, and I knew who he was because actually I coached. He went to Carmel High School, which when I was coaching at John Jay, it was one of the other schools in our league, actually. So mm-hmm. I knew him from high school. I knew he was good, and he was on a team with a cross country state team with one of my athletes, and I just knew who he was. And then he wound up winning the Monmouth Mile like a few years before this and beating a bunch of the NJ and Y guys. And the first time he broke 4 minutes, and he wasn't even in the race until that day. Like, he just got in last minute and he won. And so I kind of knew who he was, but then I went on Strava, like when John and I were getting ready to start the New Jersey Youth Track Club up, and I'm looking at Strava and I'm like, this guy, is he really doing this? Like, I don't know, what the heck is he doing? He's running workouts at 11:30 at night. He's running all his runs in like 5:30 to 5:40 pace. Yikes. I'm like, what the heck? This can't be possible, right? And like, I'm just like wondering. So I give him a call and I'm like, what are you doing? And he's like, I'm like, you doing? Like, he's like, yeah, I work the night shift, so I got to do my workouts like before I go in because I'm too tired like the next day.
Yeah.
And you know, I go out and I do these first, and then I work the night shift. He was working at an adolescent and young adult psych facility.
Wow.
And in actually right near where I used to coach high school at John Jay, he would literally be working out. That's why I was looking at it. I was like, why is he working at John Jay High School, working out at John Jay High School? Because you can see everything on Strava.
You're
right?
Stalking on Strava. I do it all the time. I gotcha.
So, I mean, this is it. But anyway, long story short, is like, yeah, I'm doing all that. And he's like, I just want to be good. And I'm just doing this because I think this is what I got to do. And I was like, well, you know, why don't you come out and, you know, let's talk and bring him in. And like, you know, it took a while to get him to slow down and fit, you know, realize that, you know, not everything needs to be so fast all the time, but he was just willing to do whatever it takes. And also, like, you could see that he was able to handle a tremendous amount of work. And that's one of his gifts, is he's incredibly durable, incredibly strong willed, but just needed direction, like a lot of athletes, you know. And that's the thing, is like, it's so hard in the sport if you don't get signed right out of college. It's hard that's why he's struggling, right? Because he wasn't signed out of college. Everyone thinks he's old, but the truth is he's really only being trained because he was at Binghamton, and you know, he just didn't reach his potential there for a lot of reasons, you know, and including, you know, from his part and everyone's part. But, you know, like whatever, that didn't work out for him. And so he's really actually kind of young in sport because he hasn't really been training like a pro or someone to get to this level for that long. It's only been 3 years. So the learning curve, you know, because he never went to NCAAs and anything. So he never went through the rounds. He never did all these things that you got to do to learn. And that's the thing about the NCAA system is you really learn a lot because of the rounds. You know, that's why I discourage people from coming out early in that, because it's the learning curve that you get. It's like the minor leagues, right? You just get a lot of at bats, you know, trying to go through the rounds, like with indoor conference meet, indoor NCAAs, outdoor conferences meet, regionals, and then NCAAs. You do 2 or 3 years like that. When you come out, you know how to run the rounds. So he missed all that experience, right? So anyway, that's why he's a very there's a lot of upside because he's 27 or whatever he is now, but he's new
in so many ways. Yeah.
335 guy, 354 mile. Congrats on you and John's success with Eric. That is really cool.
Well, he's a guy too. When you watch him race, like he's gonna take you to the line. He's going to like. I mean, that personality is so fun, and it's hard to find. It's unique. Yeah.
It's pretty fun to watch. I mean, in some ways, he's still learning that, you know, you don't necessarily have to try that hard all the time.
All right. You know. So we're going to move on. You come from this scrappy program with very little resources with Empire. Mm-hmm. And now I'm not going to say Atlanta Track Club has a ton of resources. I see the Adidas logo on your shirt here. Mm-hmm. First of all, you got some Adidas shoes now that you're running in?
I just got a pair. Yeah. I'm trying them out. Like this shirt is actually like a little bit, I think I got this at the hospitality suite last year or something.
There we
like
go.
That.
It says USA on for our listeners.
I'm definitely going to be, you know, an Adidas guy now, you know, transitioning from whatever we could get, you know, usually going down like to whatever, like, you know, discount outlets are available. And, you know, I found this place.
You did a lot with a little.
There's this great place in Flushing. I probably shouldn't mention it because I don't want people going there to get the shoes, but you can get like, you can get vapor flies and, you know, down there for like under $100. You know, and it's like an overstock.
Not anymore. Anyway. Now that you've told everybody, not anymore.
Yeah, it's hard to get to though, and they'll never find it.
Yeah.
Wow.
So why did you decide to even pursue this job? I feel like you're a New York guy. You did go to Florida. You went to California. I didn't realize that. Then you went to Florida. So
he's a global guy. Yeah, he's a global guy.
So why did you decide to even pursue the job?
Well, yeah, I mean, we've been in New York since '96. You know, Kim and I were married in Arlington and lived in Arlington, you know. You know, back in 94. So we were there for like a year before Kim got into Fordham Law School, and we moved up and been here since. So, you know, we've been here for a long time. It's going to be a transition, right? I mean, we downsized our up and moved here up to in New Paltz, which is a great running and biking area and a great little town. And we'll miss all that. But the truth is, you know, I would love to have been like able to stay here in New York and do what we built at Empire. And I'm passionate. I love all the athletes here. You know, John and I have a phenomenal relationship, but this opportunity came up and I couldn't turn it down, especially with some of the challenges that we have at Empire, just with not knowing where our next, group of funding is going to come from. You know, it's hard, you know, and that, but I get it. We've knocked on a lot of doors and that opportunity just hasn't come. And I think it will come, but with that, you know, and then you're trying to support two coaches and some of those challenges as far as like funding and everything and that. So the opportunity came up and, you know, I realized even like in June, John are like, man, how are we going to get through July? You know?
Right.
You know, so at that time, I actually was going to take on a coaching job and my, the therapeutic side of what I was doing. I had my own business there and seeing clients. So, I was going to have two jobs and trying to do Empire this coming year. And not that I'm not willing to do that and sacrifice for, because we've been doing that, you know, but, the unknown with it is tough, and for the team too, you know, it's tough. So when this came up, I had to at least pursue it, and then obviously went through the process and you know, got hired, and I'm like grateful in so many ways to have the opportunity to go down there, like you're saying, with Adidas behind the Atlanta Track Club, and working with a great organization from Rich Kanaugh on down, and to Eric and then the athletes. I mean, you know, they have a tremendous group of athletes down there, and the opportunity for me is like phenomenal.
We talked to Pace Nation, went to Sound Running, and we talked to Allie and Olivia, who are just studs. So mm-hmm. How exciting is it to work with, you know, Olivia Baker and Allie Wilson and others?
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, I'm in the process of getting to know everyone. There's a lot of people starting to finish up their season, and you know, and Amy and Andrew, they've built a great group of athletes and given them a tremendous amount of knowledge and experience in the sport, and I'm looking forward to just trying to continue that with them. And we're on the men's side trying to, you know, recruit and get some more athletes down there, and I think it's all looking really, really promising. But on the women's side, yeah, I mean, between, you know, Allie and Olivia and Sadie and Yolanda, you know, and they have a tremendous roster on that side. So yep. I'm looking forward to, you know, getting to know all those guys and understanding like what, you know, what they've done and what we can do, and just, you know, going into the Olympic year, trying to build confidence in me and what I'm doing and what, you know, what I'm about. And so I'm looking forward to have that opportunity, and I'm going to start up officially September 15th, but then nice. Moving down there okay. by October 1. So, but you know, I'm obviously doing a lot already to try to
help for build. Sure to yeah. prep.
Yep. Yeah. Tommy, as part of the high performance mission down there, is it track specific? Are they asking you to build out a marathon program? They've had marathoners in the past, or are they kind of looking to you to decide, you know, what the future is for the program?
We're going to exclusively focus on mid distance from this point.
Awesome.
Cool. Yeah. It's awesome. A mid distance program. I think right now we don't have any steeplers. Hopefully in the future we'll, you know, get that going.
That's one of the first things you'll be doing when you get down there.
Out on the track.
Yeah.
Don't follow you.
Who's got the water pits? What high schools have water pits that you can use? Who's got barriers?
We'll build our own water pit. I'll make a pit. But, but you know, so, yeah, I mean, obviously, I think, yeah, so we're going to be, that's the focus. And I like that, you know, I like being more precise. Not that I am confident, you know, I could coach those distances, but I think I'm going to be the sole coach. There's no assistant at this point. I think in the future there will be, you know, but right now, you know, so for me to be able to focus on that and to focus on that group, I think is a good transition and build it out from there, but awesome. It will be mostly only mid-distance.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Tommy, with you have a range of skill sets, right? So your ability to coach, your ability to talk psychology with the athletes, your ability to physically move the athletes and get them going from a therapy perspective, how do you envision, you know, I'm sure with your roles previously, you've been doing all of those things. How do you envision that as you now come into a head coaching role, larger roster, full funding, you know, what will that look like? You still going to be pulling athletes on the side and stretching them out, or
probably
what's this going to be?
I'm going to, you know, delegate more of that out, and they have the resources at Atlanta Track Club to do that. I mean, I think having the eye to what makes sense, and the knowledge about, you know, what's going on with that guy. He doesn't look right. He doesn't look right running. There's something going on. Let's get him in to see. Let's work on, you know, mobility in the hip. The left hip is tight, you know, like, or he's not pushing off properly, or that foot that I like. So I know the body and the biomechanics that are required to do what we're going to do. And so I think having that knowledge and not necessarily always having to be the hands-on guy, and I'm going to delegate most of that out, but have the knowledge and bring in the other experts that can do that.
Yeah.
And they have a medical team down there of doctors and physical therapists and everything in place. And we have, I think they have weekly discussions about the athletes and what's going on. And so my knowledge and my skill set to understand that, but not necessarily be the guy that, although I'm not, I know I'm going to want to jump in and say, no, let's just stretch this out. You know, like, we just got to do that. You know, the psoas is like locked up, you know, so I'm going to have to, like, you know, step back a little bit and understand that I need to stay in my lane, because, like, you know, obviously, yeah, even now with, like, I'd be on at New Jersey, New York Track Club stretching somebody out, and I got the watch and hanging around my neck, and I'm like, okay, good job. You know, back to stretching. You know, so, you know, and that's been great, because too with John, like, we can do that, and we got, like, but I'm not going to have that ability, but I'll still have that knowledge and be able to apply it. And like you're saying, like, in this day and age, all of those things are so important to have experts. You don't, you know, like, even here in New York, like, we've really got a great team. We've been so fortunate for people mm-hmm. wanting to be part of what we're doing. We have a dietitian, Amy Stevens. You know, we have Dr. Delamora. We have a chiropractor, Glenn Sorrentino. You know, and so we have, we have a psych person, Adam Wright. So we have, like, we have all that, but you need that, you know, and mm-hmm. and you got to be able to access that for the athletes when it's necessary, and then be preemptive on it. Also, you have to be ahead of a lot of this stuff, and have all of that in place and access to it. But I think the thing that I can bring is understanding when it's needed and when it's necessary. And also, you know, there's so many forms of so many modalities of recovery now. And even when you're injured, between, like, PRP and shockwave and, you know, chiropractic and dry needling and just so much out there. You have to be able to sift through it with the athletes and understand what it is in order to direct them and then give them confidence in what they're doing when these things come up.
Well, I'm excited for these athletes. I know you have this X factor, and not many coaches have it, which is the eye. It's the ability to see it. And that's what keeps athletes going, right? Mm-hmm. Is the ability to say, something's not right. We're not going to finish this workout. We're going to get this worked out. We're going to try again in a couple of days when things are moving a little bit more smoothly. That's how athletes stay on their feet. Great, great, great coaches, and even smaller percentage of coaches who have the ability to see that are so unique. And I know you're going to bring an incredible wealth of knowledge and ability to this program. So consider us your biggest fans heading to Atlanta,
that,
maybe besides
appreciate
your immediate
that.
Family, but I cannot wait to see what you do down there.
I appreciate it. I'm excited too. And I'm just grateful for the opportunity and having the support from people like you guys, and understand that the journey is awesome. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And one last one. I think, and we're going to get you out of here. I mean, we were down there, you know, pre-COVID for the, in Atlanta for the marathon trials that the Atlanta Track Club puts on. I mean, this is a big organization who does a lot in the community, which is pretty awesome, from youth events to, you know, the Peachtree Road Race, a marathon, all kinds of stuff. You know, you're going to stay in your lane with the Atlanta Track Club Elite, but do you expect to be involved in the global Atlanta running community down there?
Well, that's also a big part of the mission for the organization. From the elite standpoint, is the athletes and myself also. I mean, I'll be available when they need me to step in, mm-hmm. and when I'm around, I'm available. You know, I've been involved with this sport from youth to high school, the masters, to everything. So, you know, I'm excited to kind of get the opportunity to bounce around when they need me. Obviously, you know, coaching requires, you know, a certain amount of time, but there'll be times when I'm available to be involved. And, you know, listen, I'll drive a truck. I don't, you know, I'm like, whatever it takes. We need to get some equipment
scrappy.
Down there, you know, like, we used to
you'll drive an Airstream. You got this.
Let's get the hands dirty. You know, like, I'll do whatever it takes. I you know, I don't mind doing all that stuff. I enjoy it, honestly. The athletes down at Atlanta too, they're involved with the organization. There is a there's a volunteer portion that's you know, important to the organization, and the athletes actually give back about 15 hours a week to the organization. To volunteer hours to help push those youth programs and some of the other stuff that that they're doing in the community. And so it's a big part of the mission there. So from an elite level, and from a coaching level, like, yeah, I'm ready. And the athletes know that this is part of the deal.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Atlanta's got this best in class model, they right? Do. That mm-hmm. if we could take this model DC's and bring jealous. It to other cities, mm-hmm. maybe we need to start talking to Rich a little bit more about bringing it to DC, but the ability yeah. to connect the community, the youth, awesome. And really be encouraging the sport from the grassroots it's, up, connected to races, connected yep. to elite, and mm-hmm. you know, have the ability to host the Olympic trial. It's just an unbelievable organization. Yeah. So yeah. for you to get no, to be a part I, of it I, is just pretty so cool. exciting.
It's huge. It's huge. I think the number is somewhere around 4,000 kids involved in the youth awesome. Outreach programs in Atlanta that goes out to the schools and gets the kids running. And it's amazing. And I can remember that's one of the reasons I got involved in running as a kid at 10 years old. I mean, there were cross country meets at Van Cortlandt Park where you would go on a Saturday and there'd be 300 kids out there running. In the cross country meet age group races, 300 in each age group. So, you know, the youth and the grassroots programs are critical for our sport and for running and the culture around it to thrive. So Atlanta's got it right that way.
Yep. Well, you know? They got a good coach as well. We're really Thanks. Excited for you. Can't wait to visit you down there, man. We'll be down there. So you're heading there, you know, in October full time, September 15th, yeah. you start. Mm-hmm. As the head coach of the Atlanta Track Club Elite. So, man, congrats. This is awesome. Really excited for you. Can't wait to follow the progress as we head into an Olympic year. And thanks so much for your time today and joining
no,
us.
No, thanks a lot for having me on. I appreciate yeah. the endorsement and you guys' yeah. faith in me. And when you're down there, come check us out. We'll go for a jog in Piedmont Park.
You got it, brother. You will. All right, that's awesome. There he goes. That's the head coach of the Atlanta Track Club, Tommy Nohilly. He joined us on Pace the Nation. We're going to take a quick break. Be right back after this.
Pace the Nation is brought to you by Pacers Running Stores. Pacers has 5 stores in Northern Virginia and D.C. For the best running footwear, apparel, and gear, just stop by or schedule a virtual fitting with the best running experts in the business. Pacers Running exists to help as many people as possible through running. For every run, it's Pacers Running.
All right, welcome back to the program, and thanks again to the head coach of the Atlanta Track Club, Tommy Nohilly, for joining us. You can find information about the Atlanta Track Club. If you want to check them out, atlantatrackclub.org. They've got information about the club and the elite team. Tommy's not up there yet. I guess his official start date hasn't started quite yet.
Well, it's been announced. It's been officially announced.
Yep. So,
but you know, sometimes these web pages take a few days or weeks or months or years to change. So
that's true. That's a good
We'll give him some grace.
Awesome to have Tommy join us. You know, we touched on it. He's near and dear to our heart. Obviously, he coached you in New Jersey. We touched on it too. His wife, one of the most famous.
Here we go. Back to being Yorktown, about you. Yorktown is this about Patriots. Kim or yeah. is this about Kim. You and Kim. Arlington?
Kim was an awesome track athlete at Yorktown. I knew of Kim when I went to Yorktown. She was a couple years older than me, so we didn't cross over, but. I did not know a couple things about Tommy Nohilly. I did not know he went to California and did not know he lived in the center of the universe. Well, maybe not Clarendon, but he did live in Arlington in 1994.
When he was part of the Enclave.
Yeah. 1994 when I was graduating high school. So, you know, I remember I went up and I thought I had a chance to run for Georgetown. I went up and I saw Coach Gags. And this was like 93, and he said, hey, listen, or maybe it was 92, so maybe Tommy wasn't there yet. But Gag said, you run about 10 seconds faster and give me a call. I never did run that 10 seconds faster, but I do remember the athletes working out up there on the top of the hill, and Gags was super nice to me then. I've told him that story.
It's a reminder of the superiority of Georgetown versus Virginia.
hey, easy. But maybe my point was maybe
during that time period. Maybe during that time period, they're both phenomenal now.
So. Maybe Tommy was up there working out. But anyways, great to have Tommy Nohilly on the program. Great to be back. Pacers, Pace the Nation, I should say, is back. And how do you feel? We're 2 episodes in as we're closing this one.
Well, now that we've done a second episode, I feel like the term back might be more applicable when you were saying we're back and it was one episode in. I'm like, all right, let's see how this goes. Let's see how the next couple of weeks go. But I'm excited.
Yeah,
there's a lot of great content that we have coming in the near future. And I'm excited for all the guests that we have.
So. And we're working out the kinks a little bit, you know, little things like internet passwords and Wi-Fi connections and all that
stuff. Yeah, the fact that you don't know the internet password to your own office is amazing, but not surprising.
I had to bring in, she didn't know during the interview.
Bring in some reinforcements.
During the interview, I didn't know she was asking me, so sorry if I was distracted. So for your YouTube folks, you can see this is our Wi-Fi. So if you want to steal the Pacers running Wi-Fi, check out our YouTube video. Here, there's a tease to check out us on YouTube.
The Pacers staff is really loving you right now. Thank you.
All I needed to just show you that sign. All right. Anyways, great show, Julie.
Great show, Chris.
Good stuff. Good to be with you. This was awesome. All right. Thanks to our guest, Tommy Nohilly, for joining us. He was awesome. Always awesome. Look forward to catching up with Tommy in the future as they go into a big year for the Atlanta Track Club and just for running in general as we head into the Paris Olympics in 2024. So thanks again to Tommy for joining us. Good show. Awesome.
Thanks, Chris.
All right. For Julie, I'm Chris. This is Pace the Nation. We'll see you next time.